Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen El Trogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Kluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Hey, welcome back to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing pretty well, hanging in there, waiting for the holidays.
Yeah, waiting for the holidays. And Ronnie, I know the holidays are a huge deal for you, man. How's Christmas prep looking in the Martin household?
I mean, yeah, I don't think I'm waiting for the holidays like Piper. I mean, they have come upon us. Family is out. Merriment is being made. I mean, we are in the throes of it right now as I speak.
Now, I have to tell you, Ronnie, and this may come as sort of a confrontation in love or just sort of an alert. I think something strange happened yesterday between the three of us in that I think a teenage girl must have hijacked your phone and texted Barnabas and I a video from Facebook of like a big cat like batting around a little cat.
It was like an angry tomcat punching a stuffed tiger.
And I thought, oh, isn't that strange that either a 12-year-old girl or like a 65-year-old woman hijacked my friend's phone?
Well, Ronnie did say he has family in town. Could it have been his mother?
No, I mean, honestly, guys, I mean, it was – I mean, I hate to say this, and this might be the last time I'm part of this broadcast, but it was actually this – it was a little go-between between, you know, Big M and I and, you know, just posting some funny cat videos and just finding some hilarity in it and just wanting to share that with you boys and trying to see where your masculinity lies and how secure it really is. So I threw that out there. It was a test because I want to see if you guys would pass the test.
And did we pass the test? Were you pleased with the reaction?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm just getting the reaction right now. So I'm afraid to give you my summation of the whole ordeal.
Yeah. Well, the angry tomcat did throw a really mean right jab and had a real good hand speed. I'll give him that.
There you go.
I mean, Ted, I just felt like for a dude that loves boxing, I mean, that should have been like massively impressive to you.
Well, dude, and here's the other thing, man. I mean, I actually love cats too. I'm a huge cat person.
I didn't know you were a cat guy, Big T.
Of course I'm a cat guy. I actually think cats are like the perfect things, man. They require nothing.
Yes.
But yet they're there, they're ready to be affectionate, but they're eminently respectable. Like
ever owned a cat?
I have, man.
I got woken up by a cat 4 times last night. That's worse than a baby.
Mm. Yeah, but it's always better than a dog. And I think that's really the main point. I think that's the main point.
Utterly false.
Dude, they're clean. They're aloof. They don't need anything. They're like the best kinds of people. You know what I mean?
And you have to, why would anybody want earn their affection?
No, you can't earn their affection. They give their affection when they feel like it. They're like evil dictators who function on a whim. They're like Joffrey from Game of Thrones. They just sort of get a crazy idea and then do it. And then they try to kill something. And why would anybody want a pet that won't come when you call it? Like, what's the point?
I just don't want a pet that slobbers on me, smells bad, and, you know, kind of hops around like a cartoon character with absolutely zero intelligence.
You just described raising little boys. You know, that's kind of what that's.
But yeah, well, Ronnie raised a girl, so he doesn't know about that. But that just means you're getting the wrong kind of dog, or your friends have had the wrong kind of dog, or they don't know how to train a dog. I mean, they do hop around. They get excited. But dogs are really, really trainable as long as you don't get like one of those little dust mop things. Like,
only dog owners say that. And every dog I've ever been around in my life lunges at me to destroy me. And then every dog owner replies this, and I quote, "That's so strange. He never does that."
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, well, I mean,
he never does that.
I don't know that I ever said that about any of the dogs that I owned at any point that, oh, they never do that. Mainly because they never lunged at anybody. Now, they never met you, Ronnie, so you might be the exception to the
rule. Piper, I hate to say this, but dogs should not be domestic animals, brother. Cats
are not domestic animals. They are wild animals who have just basically decided, oh, this is a warm place to sleep.
They're behaved, though. They have dignity. They have respect.
They're behaved.
They do have dignity and respect.
Behaved because they're small enough that they can't kill you. If a cat was 45 pounds, you would be dead.
Oh, absolutely. And there's something inherently amazing that I respect about that process right there.
I do too. I do too.
Guys, can I just say two words to you right now to sort of segue into our next transition here? Merry Christmas. Okay.
Well, there you have it from host of the program, Ronnie Martin, with that's a good radio segue right there.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animals.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guys, we do have a lot to talk about today, and we're going to kind of truncate this episode a little bit in hopes of squeezing in another episode here in the studio. But one of the huge things that's happening culturally right now, fellas, is I hear through the grapevine that there's a new Star Wars movie out or about to be out. I actually don't know really the ins and outs of that, but The Force Awakens is a huge thing. There are people camping out, paying an ungodly amount of money for tickets, and this is something, guys, that I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't like the Star Wars movies. I have nothing against them in the sense that, you know, I hope it does well. I hope people enjoy it, but I just can't. I don't really do movies that happen in space. That's just kind of a personal, you know, thing of mine. So.
Big T, I did not know that. I think I feel like that's fascinating for me to even find that out about you. I should have known that, but it's really interesting. You don't do sci-fi, huh?
I don't do sci-fi. I don't do space. Really, the only space movie I've ever liked was Apollo 13, the old Tom Hanks movie.
And that's just very loosely about space, you know.
Space is just like it just happens to be in space.
Well, it wasn't really science fiction. It was more like a historical account or a biopic than anything.
Yeah,
it
was
like space just made a cameo appearance in Apollo.
Space made
13.
A cameo, but really it was all the real stuff.
It wasn't the final frontier, as they say.
Right. It wasn't like Luke, I am your father. I mean, it wasn't any of that sort of lore. You know?
Dude, the last kind of space movie I saw was what was the one with Matthew McConaughey where he's like hurtling through
Interstellar?
Interstellar. Yeah, yeah. I thought the first half was really good.
Yeah, very, again, loosely about space, really.
Yeah, it wasn't so much about space, which I think
See,
is why.
When I hear enough people describe a movie as like mind-blowing and confusing, that wasn't a selling point. I never saw Interstellar because people
it's not
like,
that great, to be honest.
Yeah, everybody was just like, man, it was so confusing. I had to watch it four times. I'm like, that's not a selling point. I want to go in and get my 2 hours worth of fun and leave. That's what I'm going for in a movie.
So Piper, are you on the Force Awakens bandwagon then?
I mean, not in the go dress up in costumes and wait overnight for a movie theater thing, but I will definitely see it. I have seen all of the other ones growing up. I loved the original three, whatever those are, episodes 4, 5, and 6. The real ones, the episodes 1, 2, and 3 were all horrific. So I'm going to pretend like they don't exist, and I'm going to do my best not to show them to my kids. But I'll go see it because, I mean, in large part because J.J. Abrams is involved and he does really fun movies. So I'm assuming that he can do something really cool with this one as well.
He was the Super 8 guy, right? Did he do Super 8?
I think so. He also
did. Which is a phenomenal movie.
It is phenomenal. Absolutely love it.
He did the two most recent Star Trek movies, which again, Ted, not your cup of tea, but also very fun movies. Even if you weren't a Trekkie, which I never was. Like, I didn't really know the original Star Trek. These were fun sci-fi movies.
Yeah, they kind of it sort of brought back that franchise in a respectable way, for sure.
Now, Big R, are you a space guy?
You know, I'm not so for me, I'm selective about it. I don't just like it because it's sci-fi. You know, there's those people out there that it's like anything that sort of reeks of sci-fi, they immediately dive after it. That's not really me. But I did grow up with the Star Wars movies, so there is a little bit of romance to them. And this one having all sort of the, you know, the old characters kind of come back and recast. I mean, I definitely have a high level of interest, but I'm like Piper, man. I'm not one of these dudes that, you know, bought advance tickets 2 months ago and, you know, going on eBay trying to find extra tickets for $500 or $600 a pop just so I can get there on Friday night and camp out with my lightsaber. I mean, that's just
– Wait, you have a lightsaber? Where did you get that? I want one.
I'm with you, Ted. That's kind of what I wouldn't understand that about any movie.
Yeah.
Like in the sense that like I have to be there opening night because I just feel like I'm just going to pretend that opening night for me is a week from this Friday. That's there my opening night. That's
that seems reasonable.
I'm curious. Movies are not a social event. You go and you sit in a dark theater and you forget that right. there are people on either side of you, and the entire experience happens on the screen and through the speakers. So what is it about opening day or opening night that makes it so phenomenal? It is the exact same movie in 2.5 weeks, or in the cheap theater in about, you know, 6 or 8 weeks, when I can, you know, I can take my kids and spend this, you know, get 3 tickets for the price of, you know, the original one or whatever. I don't understand the whole freak out about opening night thing. And that's true for almost any movie. I haven't been to an opening night movie since I was in college, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah, see, I think the general public, so I avoid those things here's a kind of conceptual question for you guys. And Big R, something you said kind of spurred this for me. If you were to dress up like a character in Star Wars, like if you had to for some reason, like who would it be and why?
I mean, gosh, I mean, it's embarrassing to even try to think about something like that, because I just feel like that whole, I mean, I'm so not part of that whole like Comic-Con, like, right. you know, I'm not, yeah, just, you know, those geek out, like, you know, comic book fans that, like, you know, World of Warcraft. I so don't get that whole concept or that whole mentality of like, I want to look like one of the characters because that somehow is going to enhance my movie going experience. Right. But since you asked,
yeah.
Dude, I don't know. I've literally never thought about it. I mean, obviously,
since you asked, I will do you the solid of not answering.
That's right.
I mean, look, if I have to be, you know, I have to have a little self-respect. If somebody put, you know, I mean, look, if Jerry Falwell Jr. put a gun in my hand and then told me to put it to my head,
only if you're a Liberty University student would he do that.
And yeah, there was a radicalized Muslim. So
I would have to pick a Luke Skywalker or a Han Solo because I don't know what else I would do.
But here's the thing. Han Solo has already been taken by every woman between the age of 20 and 35 because you have the vest, the riding boots, the fitted pants. I mean, it is the uniform of autumn and early winter. Well, no, because he did the combat boots, not like the knee-height boots.
Oh, so, gotcha.
No, yeah. Seriously, if you go look at Han Solo and you go look at women's fashion of like sort of yuppie women –
okay.
He has been claimed. So you can take Luke. You can't do you can't take Han Solo. Sorry.
You know, man, I'm looking at my wife right now, and you're right. She is Han Solo. She's dressed exactly like Han right now.
That's fantastic.
That's fascinating.
Can Big M hear us?
No, she can't hear us, but she's wearing a black vest, black boots, black pants tucked into her boots, and she's getting ready to hop on a horse that's decorated like an X-Wing fighter. I'm totally nice. Joking right now.
Tell
about everything except the horse. You were serious.
Yeah. Well, guys, I'm just trying to lighten the mood after our
little tiff,
the introduction that just threatened to cancel the entire.
But listeners love tension, so you know the fact that we don't even have to like formulate it; it just happens.
Listeners love tension, then we need to just bring Al Trogi back, and I'll just sink back into the background.
No, you're doing just fine generating tension. Keep talking about Christmas and cats, and we can fight all year long.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. There it is, man. There it is. Well, guys, speaking of tension, there's been some tension in kind of, I guess you could say, broader evangelicalism of late in that, again, Big R, you alluded to this. So Jerry Falwell Jr. Of Liberty University has I guess, said that he wants all of his students to be strapped. So he wants all the Liberty kids carrying guns around. Am I right, Barnabas? Am I getting this right?
Or at least to have the option. He wants to allow conceal and carry on campus at Liberty University.
So it's not like, you know, some colleges where you enroll and they give you a MacBook. You know, at Liberty, they're going to give you like a GAT, you know.
Right? That's right. Yeah, exactly. You enroll and you get some handgun. And, you know, you probably get one that's sort of personalized to your, you know, your grip, you know, what you can handle.
You can get a skin
handle.
For it, you know.
You can get a Walther. I mean, there's a whole bunch of options. Yeah. But he said this specifically in the context of the shooting in San Bernardino, where he basically said, we need to shoot them before they shoot us, speaking of radicalized Muslims. And so he wants college students to be armed should someone come on campus. And that sounds like about the dumbest idea I've ever heard, because I've met college students before.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly, he's never spent any time around college boys. You know, I think the last thing you want to give that people group is a firearm. You know?
They're just going to go around shooting out light bulbs and stuff. they're going to do like high noon in the dorm hallways.
Oh, dude, Big R, what do you make of all this?
I don't know. I just, man, I always cringe because I feel like whenever we see these people that are sort of in some bizarro way representing any form of evangelicalism, it's just so cringy because there's a part of you that just wants to like stand up on a mountain and hold up a sign that says, I'm not with him.
Yeah.
You know?
But then you end up like that BuzzFeed, I'm a Christian but thing that was viral, you know, a month or two ago, where it was people trying to disassociate themselves from Christianity. And so you can't be the guy you're wanting to be.
Well, you can't.
Right. But you can't be with him either.
Yeah, I'm not saying let's resurrect the emergent church and have Ted write, you know, part two. I'm just saying
actually,
like,
let's do that. That worked out very well for me.
There has to be some sort of a middle ground.
We can call it why we weren't emergent.
Yeah. Right. There you go. It's a post. It's a postscript.
Dude, I love it. I love the postscript. Let's get some people on the phone, man. Let's make this happen.
I don't know, like what. So let me understand, because I just sort of skirted the story, like a lot of people did. And so, why was he advocating that for college students in particular?
Well, I think because, you know, there's been shootings and stabbings on college campuses. You know, there's been sort of a rise in these public mass attacks, and then there was the one that sort of tipped everything out in California, or at least tipped these comments. And so he basically sees radicalized Muslims as an imminent threat, and he feels that the best way to fend them off or to protect the campus is to allow students to be armed and to defend themselves. And I mean, it's just a microcosm of the larger gun control argument. He's just putting it on a college campus, which makes it sound sort of more ridiculous. And then he's bathing it, but because he's the president or provost or whatever the heck he is of a Christian institution, it sort of has that sanctified spin on it of like, this is a Christian viewpoint.
Right. This is an official thing.
When in reality, it just sounds like the NRA's viewpoint to me. I mean, it's not. It is in no way tied to the Christian faith. It is if anything, you could call it a practical viewpoint, but I don't think it's terribly practical at all. I think arming everybody just makes everybody more likely to get shot or to pull a Barney Fife and shoot themselves in the foot.
Well, I mean, and then so is there anything – we were talking about this off the air a little bit, but is there any – I mean, is there anything to the fact that we got Falwell Jr. that sounds eerily like his old man? You know, just saying ridiculous things.
I'm pretty sure. Remind me,
what was his old man famous for saying?
Well, he was the religious right guy. So he wanted to create sort of a Christian nation state, you know, make the United States a true Christian nation, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So just he blended politics and religion in this like super tight thing. So it wasn't sort of like we're a Christian nation loosely, you know, or founded on Christian principles or whatever. I mean, he wanted Christians to run the country and sort of make a theocracy almost.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Falwell was foot in mouth, I mean, of the worst, you know, of the worst kind, you know, for years and years. It was unbelievable.
But, I mean, right alongside this was Franklin Graham saying at one point, and he may have backed off of this, so I don't want to misrepresent him, but he definitely said at one point that we should not allow any more Muslims to immigrate to the United States. Or be refugees, as the case may be. And so, I mean, he's just drawing a tight line there. And I feel like that one's like the opposite of his old man, because Billy Graham stood for religious liberty. You know, he understood the principles of we all need to have religious liberty, and then we need to put the gospel forth as the one true hope for the world. And Franklin, on the other hand, is just saying no Muslims. And that seems... So you've got Jerry Falwell Jr. who seems to be running in the track of his old man, and you got Franklin who seems to be going counter to his father. And I mean, as somebody who often gets compared to my dad, I don't really want to hold either of them up against their dads, because it's not really fair to them, even though I'm sure that it's happened to them their whole life. I just want to look at the statements on their own merit or complete lack thereof in both cases.
Pipe, let me ask you this, man. Where does John Piper fall on the whole gun thing? Is he a gun owner? Is he a gun enthusiast?
he's
a hunter.
He's not a gun owner, but I mean, he's the first time I ever shot a gun was with him. I mean, he's not anti the existence of guns. I have heard him say privately that he thinks the argument that a gun is for self-defense is foolish because in his opinion and in his observation, and I would tend to agree with this, guns escalate conflict. They do not eliminate conflict, generally speaking. I mean, and I think you could make the same case in all of the police violence that's happened too. I mean, you can't shoot somebody with a gun you don't have. And so, you know, guns escalate issues. They don't eliminate issues. And people who say otherwise probably – I mean, people who keep guns for self-protection usually keep them locked in a safe apart from the ammo.
Sure.
Which means that when somebody breaks into the house, gun's not going to do you a whole lot of good.
Yeah, there's a lot of steps that have to happen before you –
I'm sorry. Would you hang on right over there while I go try to remember my combination, pull this thing out, get the ammo out of the other cabinet, load it up, and then – press play on this again, and I will try to.
You know, I found that intruders will usually give you that kind of respect, though.
They'll do that courtesy.
I think they will. I have a lot of faith in that.
Are you a gun guy, Ronnie?
Am I a gun guy?
Yeah, you don't strike me as one. I'm just saying, though, now that you live in the Midwest, now that you live in sort of the breadbasket of gun owning America, I wondered.
That's putting it loosely, but yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's so funny. I was having a conversation about this last night with my brother-in-law, and I just, gosh, this is probably going to get me into some kind of trouble. But
I'm already there. Don't worry. Very
little opinion of the whole gun debate. I mean, have guns, don't have guns. I just can't fall into one radical end of either side of the debate. It just really falls out of my level of interest.
Yeah.
So I'll just keep it right there. I'll keep it right down the line.
And I realize having a conservative evangelical audience for the most part, I'm sure I pissed somebody off by saying what I just said. But here's the thing. I'm not advocating the government taking away everybody's guns. I'm just saying that most of the arguments for owning guns are stupid. So, the action that needs to happen, I have no idea. I don't know how to solve the issues that are facing, but I do know that I have not heard a convincing argument for why somebody needs an AR-15 in their house.
Or that's so funny where you just say, like, I'm probably making somebody angry. I just think all the laws and all the arguments are stupid.
Oh, there you go. There you have it.
It wasn't really an apology. It was just an acknowledgement that somebody's angry. Like, I hear you. I understand. I know your feelings, and I stand by what I said.
Yeah. So guys, so get angry at Piper. Any gun enthusiasts that come on and want to tweet about, you know, something offensive that was said on the show.
And Ron, in
the reform circles we run in, man, guns are these folks love their guns, dude. I mean, church service is like a, you know, it's like the OK Corral, you know,
so
everybody
true.
Walking in strapped to the gills.
Certainly in the Midwest, right? Everybody's a concealed carrier.
Absolutely. I mean, here
there's a lot of pride
taken
in that, man.
It's crazy here in Tennessee too. I mean, I'm about 3 weeks after we moved here, we took our kids to like this pumpkin patch or something. And I walk into the gift shop and there's just a guy in like jeans and a t-shirt with a revolver on his hip. I mean, it was, and having moved from Chicago, who had not yet legalized, you know, conceal and carry, or in this case, not at all concealed and carry. I was very thrown off, but then it just became normal. Yeah. I mean, it's like in church and the grocery store and the gas station, everywhere except work, because they don't allow guns here.
Yeah. It's like, you know, excuse me, Wyatt Earp, while I, you know, grab a box of cereal. That's crazy, man. That's just crazy. Well, guys, let's land this episode with a little bit of a lighter topic compared to guns on campus. And that is the issue of gluttony. We're moving into the holiday season where we're eating and in some cases drinking is a big deal. And you know, somebody posed the question, probably a listener, why is gluttony like the acceptable sin for evangelicals? Why can we sort of, you know, wistfully lean back in our chairs and sort of, you know, pat our ample bellies and kind of reflect on how much we've eaten in a yuck yuck sort of way. I have to admit, I haven't given this a ton of thought because I haven't, you know, I'm a big guy. I love to eat. I love food. My wife's a baker, so. But I've never felt, I guess, personally convicted on this issue of gluttony. I guess when I've had a big, great meal, I've just sort of thanked the Lord for it and enjoyed it and reflected on how awesome it was and kind of left it at that. Guys, is this a case of again, kind of young reformdom trying to, like, you know, name a sin and sort of make everybody miserable? Or is it a real thing?
Well, I think gluttony is a real thing. I think if I was going to try to define gluttony, because I think that's the hardest part, is it just eating too much? Is it eating mm-hmm. a lot? What is it? I feel like gluttony is using food to cover up something else, you know, cover up some pain, cover up some insecurity, cover up some something. And so, I mean, sitting down at a delicious meal at Christmas or Thanksgiving and eating until you can't take another bite is not gluttony. Making a habit of that, in part because you're just terribly unhealthy, that would be gluttony. I mean, I think the question comes from the place that you just never hear this addressed. No pastor will talk about it. Now, granted, a lot of pastors have a fair belly hanging over their belts and love their fried chicken, so nobody likes to talk about the sins that they obviously struggle with. But I don't think it's trying to stir anything up. I think it's more like, hey, this was listed as one of like the seven deadly sins. Like, this is a biblical thing. So
I think you make a great point, though, of, and this totally makes sense to me on a sin level, like using something, whatever it is, whether it's food or whatever, to sort of self-medicate and to kind of mask, you know, whatever's deficient in you spiritually or whatever's going on in your life. I think, you know, I think that is a real thing. And you know, that is probably worth discussion. Big R, what's your take on this
one? Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I wish I could disagree. It's definitely like it's a lifestyle sin, I think, rather than just enjoying a meal, maybe doing some occasional overeating. Yeah, for some reason, though, I'm with both you guys. It just doesn't fall under one of what I would say the voodoo evangelical sins, sort of like the sins that shall not be named, you know, and like I don't know why that is. I think drawing the line, like Piper said, is a little hard to do. Like, what is like some of us are just bigger men, bigger women than other people. So like our line of what gluttony might be is going to be radically different than another person's. And again, I don't think it's so much even a, like what Piper was saying, it's not really so much of a weight thing, is it? It's more of like more of how drawn we are in our affection towards what we're consuming.
Right. It's like an idolatry thing almost. You know, how much are we staking on this thing? I mean, so you could have a super skinny person who always drowns their sorrows in Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Like Ben and Jerry's is their medicine.
I like to think of myself as that guy, B-Pipe. I like to think of myself as a really skinny guy that drowns his sorrows in Ben and Jerry's, to be quite frank with you.
I think the thing that makes food sinful is the same thing that makes alcohol sinful. It's not consuming it. It's over-consuming it or consuming it in place of something healthier. So, for example, if you're really depressed and you turn to the bottle, that's very obviously a poor decision. But it's not a better decision to turn to a bag of Hershey's Kisses or, you know, or like fried chicken, comfort food. I mean, it's called comfort food for a reason, but it's not the right and sole way to find comfort. And I think the hard thing to define here is most sins that we like to talk about as Christians are ones that are black and white. So the resolution to drinking for a lot of conservative Christians is don't drink. Tobacco, don't smoke. You can't say don't eat. It doesn't work. So let's just not talk about that.
Isn't that because they're – but see, the thing is though with alcohol, you can make the argument that it's mind-altering. You know, like having that extra burger is not like altering your mind in sort of a way that causes you to not think right and, you know, and sit.
Yeah, the alcohol is like itself physiologically – escapist, you know, it's allowing you to,
it's a drug.
Yeah, it's a drug. It's allowing you to get away. It's allowing you to you know, dull the pain or what have
you. So I think when we go back in the church and we see why those things sort of rose to prominence as being like, those are the sort of the sins of the world that we're going to stay away from. I don't think anybody thought that like having like, you know, an extra large fry as opposed to a small fry was in any way going to like, you know, alter your perception and the way that you're able to like worship the Lord because, you know, you're intoxicated.
Isn't there also, and I'm not arguing with you. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's like a one-to-one connection between consuming too much alcohol and the effect on your mind. But I think I think with everything we know about health and fitness now and trying to just take care of one's body, couldn't you make a similar kind of argument for food that if you know the consequences of consistently overeating or consistently eating the wrong things, and I am by no means a health food nut. I mean, I'm not even a little bit. I try to limit my calorie intake to something less than unholy, but that's about the best I can do. So, but I mean, if you know that isn't consistently killing the fast food or consistently eating sweets, like isn't there something in that that you're just going, you're not taking care of what God gave you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think what I've done is I think what you've done is you've like de-simplified it. You know what I mean? It's like it definitely goes deeper. It's more complex. I think what we're getting at is what the heart desires, the heart goes after the most. And it really doesn't matter what it is. It's just gluttony and food and overeating. It's just not something that you're going to hear, Matt Chandler do a 10-week sermon series on.
Right. Now, I will say in light of all this, I want listeners to walk away feeling good. And so if your heart is guilt-free, crush you some Christmas cookies and eat a big dinner. So, I mean, you enjoy your holidays. Do not let us make you feel guilty about killing your Christmas dinner.
Guys, you heard it here, man. Barnabas Piper said, eat to your heart's content this holiday season.
There it is. And guys, we need to be good stewards of what we've been given, which is this this airtime that we have, this precious time together, gentlemen. So I'm going to draw this.
Close in prayer.
Yeah, we should. If you guys would bow your heads in front of your computers, that would be great. Actually, don't do that. Let's just say that we've wandered to and fro, and Rachel the Held Evans.
There's no better way to start your day than spending time in God's Word and in prayer. Don't know where to start? We have a free daily prayer podcast created to help you do just that. The Your Daily Prayer podcast delivers a thoughtful devotional and timely prayer to you 7 days a week. Gain inspiration, faith, and encouragement with daily messages in 10 minutes or less. To start listening now, search Your Daily Prayer on your favorite podcast app or visit lifeaudio.com.